Vickers.
Go ahead.
You heard us also commenting about this window of opportunity, maybe for suspension. Would that be a good alternative to this?
Representative Refine, again, I'd say that, in fact, that may exist now under the current layoff statutes or the rules regarding layoffs. And again, under those, it allows, again, for payment of earned wages to be delivered at the regular payday. And so I'm not sure I'm discerning between a layoff and what you're calling a suspension without pay. To me, that's what a layoff is. And we've already got rules that address that.
I think Representative Mannix kind of gave you this scenario that, you get mad at somebody, you fire them, but maybe there should be this, in light of a cooling off period of time, that maybe it was just at the moment you were frustrated or the employee was frustrated, that it's an amazing little phraseology you could put in there to make a stopgap to get us off of this dilemma of after five and on weekends. That is not supposed to be, as you heard earlier testimony, that anything's possible. So if we're going to get past that point and offer some kind of little phraseology that gives enough wiggle room where you can just say to your employee, you're suspended without pay, and we'll talk about this. It's Saturday at 2, but, I'm not going to call the bookkeeper up to take your check, so I'm going to suspend you without pay, and we'll talk about this Monday, when reality is you're going to can the person anyhow based on that time o'clock, 2 o'clock Saturday. I don't really have any problem with that if that's the kind of wiggle room we're trying to get in society.
I believe that probably occurs in a lot of employment situations right now.
If you're using the law of layoff, then I would suspect whether or not that's legal. That's probably really stretching the interpretation of that. If we need to have the Bureau understand that the suspension without leave is a good policy decision for this, then maybe that's what we need to put in place.
The only additional response I'd have to that is there may be sometimes when the end of the employment agreement does need to occur at the time of termination. Could be the fact that the employee has keys to your establishment, and when you tell him that he's suspended without pay, goes home.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't think the law would deprive an employer of terminating right there on the spot if they want. I'm just saying if the other mechanisms are not in place that he believes that the conditions are such that he has to terminate that person at that specific time in case of a theft or casing of a till or whatever it might be, that they have this other little number they fall back on and says, I'm suspending you without pay until we can, under a normal week to business day, and we can discuss this.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Bint. I represent the Oregon Lodging Association. As Mike mentioned, I represent over 800 hotels, motels, resorts, and so forth, over 1,000 total members. I guess I apologize. I had a person who owns multiple properties who was supposed to be here to testify but was unable to be here, had to be out of town. So I'll do my best to explain the situation that has come up to me with their problem with the way the law is currently. I feel the bill would solve many of the problems that management companies and those who have multiple properties encounter. And that is quite common right now to have multiple properties, to have a management company run a hotel, motel, and in different parts of the state. It's very common in our industry. Our industry is, to point out, is a 24-hour industry. Like many of the restaurant establishments, we don't close 365 days out of the year. Typically, a hotel or motel, there is what's called a manager on duty or a weekend manager. The managers in this situation may have the authority to fire, but they're not going to have the authority to payroll, write a check, even going so far as taking money out of the till and saying, all right, here's your pay. This is about what you're supposed to get. We see that there's a problem there currently.
Can I interrupt for a moment?
Sure.
But shouldn't such institutions just have a policy that says to the manager, actually, Mr. Manager or Mrs. Manager, you have authority to suspend without pay until the next regular, I'm serious about this, the next regular working day, at which time you should consult with someone higher up in the chain to confirm your recommendation that an employee be terminated. Institute that as a policy of the company. It does allow for a cooling off period. We don't require any change in the law. And on Monday, you consult and you confirm that, yes, your recommendation that someone be fired will be implemented. And you, the person's been called in, and you say, this confirms that, well, your suspension is over, you're now terminated, and here's your pay. Couldn't you do that under current law?
I guess that's possible. I guess I look at the situation where that person, in the event that they were supposed to be fired or something, terminated, that maybe the management company has an operations director. That person's out of town. They've got businesses in other states. They're gone for a week, 2 weeks, well, which is common.
But that's a practical problem I think anyone can take care of by having alternative people available up the chain of command. But so far, what you're telling me is a situation that I think you could handle practically. If I'm wrong about it being handled practically, let me know.
Representative Maddox, I wonder what would happen if the employee said, no, I don't want to be suspended without pay. I want to finish my shift, and I want to work my regularly scheduled shift tomorrow. Am I fired or aren't I? Wonder what your response would be then.
Say you're suspended without pay, leave the premises.
I think we'd need statutory authority.
On the other hand, now, if you came in here and you told me that Boley was coming after you and saying that was a sham, and see, I don't think it is a sham to have a company policy that says you're going to have a cooling off period for a couple of days when you want to terminate somebody. It would be a sham if you're routinely doing this just to get people off the payroll. But if you have a policy where you're going to do this and you're not paying any more benefits and you can exclude them from the premises, but you want to think about it for a couple of days and get higher authority to approve it, it seems you could implement that. And now if Boley was saying that was a sham, I'd say, wait a minute, no. We'll change the law then to say it can be done. But I'm getting shakes of the head back there. I don't think from the folks at Boley, I don't think they would come after you for that kind of a policy.
So, Mr. Chair, could I follow up? So if we follow that train of thought, and now if you put your arguments in a perspective of now the only thing left, you've solved the problem about the person who just tried to rob the bank or beat up the store manager. You solved that problem because you sent them home on a cooling off period for 48 hours or whatever it takes. Okay, now the only thing left is this is a scheduled shutdown come Friday. Now, why can't you plan for a scheduled shutdown Friday by having a paycheck ready? I mean, you've decided that this is all the longer this job is going to last because you hired somebody and they're going to work from Monday to Friday, and Friday comes. Now, what's your problems with having a paycheck ready on Friday or if it ends on Saturday at 8 p.m. is when this person's shift is going to end. But you know about that early in the week because you know that that's just when the job's going to – where's your problem there?
No problem. If you would like to add language that would say or at regularly scheduled shutdowns, that's fine. Or at the shutdown period, that's fine. If you need to add that to address
see,
it.
I guess – if the logic and the discussion that we've been carrying is in case of discipline, you got all the protection you need already.
Again, I think that there is protection that, you know, maybe we can allow ourselves the ability to get that check out. I'm not saying that that's a physical impossibility. You know, as Boley says, you can do anything. Nothing's impossible. But there is additional cost that's incurred by that. And it's cost that's incurred oftentimes because of the choice the employee is making.
Mr. Chairman.
And I'm wondering if that's just.
But again, I'm still thinking, is this something that could be taken care of by a real aggressive employer seminar program, or is it something that requires a social policy change? Because if I've got someone who's acting like a jackass, and I go up and say, you're suspended without pay, I want to meet with you again on Monday, he'll probably say to me, well, screw you, I quit. And he's just quit. All of a sudden, I don't have to pay him right away anyway. I said, well, if you quit, you quit. I'm sorry, I acknowledge that you quit. Thank you very much. I'll now get into the timeline for when I have to pay you for quitting. But I didn't fire you. And by the way, when you apply for unemployment compensation, I'm going to make that point too, because I suspended you without pay, so I could think about the way you've been acting. And I'm just, when I'm looking at what I call the real world scenarios, just give managers that good advice. And besides which, I might have been upset that night, and maybe on Monday I'll change my mind and say, geez, you know, I'm sorry I had a bad day, and we all have bad days, and let's talk about it. Particularly as the labor force shrinks out there, and it's going to be hard to find good people.
Representative Maddox, again, I don't disagree that that ability to solve that particular problem does exist. There's no doubt about it. Again, it's causing a cost burden on the employer at that degree. And yeah, it will, because every time you process a payroll check outside of its regular payroll cycle, you're adding additional cost to the system.
Why,
and again,
why couldn't you suspend them without pay until next paycheck?
Fine. I think that at that point we'd probably hear that, in fact, we'd get some static from Boley about that.
We heard testimony Boley wouldn't do anything about that.
Okay, good.
If it's not a sham, if it's a reasonable employer policy where you have a cooling off period, and actually maybe you should have a management meeting every payday about those situations.
Okay, so if a reasonable cooling off period of a week, 10 days? That's what Idaho says, 10 days or next regular scheduled payday.
And again, I don't want to be giving you management advice. I'm just thinking out loud about the social policy. And I know I've been hogging the questions. I'll shut up.
Representative Edmondson?
Thank you. I guess I'm not as wild about the cooling off period or the suspending without pay, because it sounds an awful lot like a discharge to say you're going home and you're not going to get paid. I mean, from a practical point of view, it's damn hard to distinguish between that and a discharge. But I am concerned that that employers who have good reasons to immediately discharge someone, or that somebody quits, obviously that if the employee says I quit and walk out, the employer has no control over that situation. And I think in those cases where an employer has some reason to discharge an employee, or the employee gives them the reason by walking off the job, that it's unfair to burden the employer. But I've been troubled by employers' reluctance to concede that they have good and articulable reasons for terminating people. And in Oregon, employers cling to at-will employment as if it's some sort of a religious significance. And I just have never agreed with that. What would your reaction be if we said that if an employer can demonstrate that there was a good cause for cessation of employment, they can wait until the next regular payday? But if an employer can't articulate why they're firing someone, or including that the employee walked off the job, quit, well, that's obviously a pretty good reason,
mm-hmm.
If they can't demonstrate good cause, then they would have to pay them immediately.
I think that we'd be very amenable to something like that, because, again, we don't fire people unless we have a need to. It's expensive to fire people.
And you have a reason, almost always, whether you're ever required to say what the reason is. My sense is 99% of the time or more, you have some reason.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't cutting the lettuce fast enough or whatever.
Well, or they showing up consistently to work. There's always a reason.
Sure,
and I would say that if the language was such that it required some type of reasonable cause for that discharge in order to give that paycheck at the regular time, we'd be comfortable with that.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Did you finish yours?
Just another comment. Getting back to the management companies and the multiple operators, where one person is responsible for the payroll, usually an operations director, out of town, whatever the situation might be, it's not always necessarily a weekend problem. If a manager determines and has the authority, and he is at that property, the authority, catches an employee in the act of something that they felt they should be terminated immediately, there's still the problem of calling that operations person, finding out they're out of town for 2 days, 3 days, tracking down that person, having that person call back the office and say, okay, here's the computer system, here's how you turn it on, here's how you access it, or here's how you figure out what their wages should be. So I think there is, I think there's problems during the week, weekend, nighttime. I think there is a problem out there in the industry. And I think that's it.
Okay. We appreciate your coming to testify for us today. Is there any questions? Would you object to Mr. Edmondson's approach if you had good cause to terminate a person that they could would have to wait till the next pay period?
Going along the line with the suspension,
That isn't what he suggested. He suggested that if you had good reason to terminate a person, that they would have to wait till the next pay period.
I would think that makes sense, and I just want to follow up. That also includes if the employee chooses to leave.
Well, I would say that there is good cause for cessation of employment. That's cessation of employment, basically, that you would pay immediately, wages would be due and payable, as it is now, unless the employer can demonstrate cessation of employment was for good cause, in which case it should be due and payable then the next regular payday.
Maybe we should define good cause.
I don't mind if we. I mean, I think there's ample. We can find
there's room there.
Good employee. Cause, but that's not hard. But the point is, and then obviously, right now, employers do not have to ever, unless there's a contract involved, and you're specifically accepting those situations.
Right.
But if there's no contract involved, it's at will employment. You can just say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to give any reason at all, but you rounder now. You have to give them a check. And if you can say, and I'm willing to say, I'll go along with letting you wait till the next regular payday, if you'll agree to give good cause, because I think that's an important direction that we should move in our labor laws.
I would say that might be acceptable. You know, we probably have to talk about the definition of good cause. But.
Well, I think I'm willing to say that it's a demonstrated, you know, it's just a reason that you can demonstrate, because my experience has been that employees are sometimes understandably frustrated when they lose a job and they don't know why, and they suspect the worst, and that they're suspicious that there was some hidden agenda or motive for being fired because they were the wrong ethnic background, or they went to the wrong church or something.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, you get to the bottom of it, there probably was a reason. They were late 3 days in a row, or they weren't cutting the lettuce fast enough, and that they were fired for that reason.
We'd be happy to pursue that angle.
Mr. Chair, can I just inquire briefly, would failing to continue work be a good cause?
I think cessation of employment when an employee walks off the job is a damn good reason to not continue employment.
Okay, so another way.
I think quitting is the best reason an employer has for ceasing to consider an employee an employee.
I agree. But the point is, what you're saying then is that for voluntary, if an employee voluntarily quits, he has to wait, he or she has to wait until the next regular payday.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify.
They control. And they make that decision. They could wait to quit on payday.
Yeah.
It seems to me.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Can I just real quick raise one other thing? In the timber industry, at least, you get paid on the 10th for the last half of the previous month. You get paid on the 25th, first half of that month. That's kind of traditional anyway. So what you just said about waiting to quit on payday, wouldn't necessarily apply because
that's
right. Paid Friday for work up through 5 o'clock on Friday.
You're absolutely right.
So that's just something we need to keep in mind when we talk about, quote, paydays here.
Well, I appreciate that. Not being a timber owner or manager, I didn't realize that, Sam Johnson. I appreciate your real life experience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Greg?
I appreciate it.
Abundance of appreciation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Greg Teeple, representing the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council.
That's all the time you have.
Yeah, that's it.
Are there any questions?
I'd like to describe a situation that the bill will encompass, and you well know, and I can appreciate the comments that were made earlier by the Mike giving testimony and Representative Rapine's comments about construction, but nonetheless, I think it's important for those who don't understand how that works that they should. It's a mobile workforce with mobile work sites We don't, it's rare that, it's just a small portion of the tens of thousands of construction workers that goes to a particular shop and start their day of work out from there in the morning. More commonly, they go to a job site. They go to a job, and irregardless of where they live, they go to a job site in Portland. Maybe the next day that employer sends them to Goldendale, Washington, or down to Medford. So they're on the move. They may not be Oregon employees. So when we have this mobile workforce come into the area to subsidize our workforce, to get these projects built and then move on, these are the people and the people that live here that move to different parts of the state to do the work I have a concern about. They need that money upon termination to what we term as hit the road. They're going to hit the road and they need all the money that they can get. The weeks prior to, they've been sending their money home and keeping enough to live on. That's typical. And then come termination, if they know it and they quit, they're setting the stage for getting a paycheck sent to a certain address some days later, and we don't have a problem with that. But as you can well imagine, there are personality conflicts. There are a myriad of reasons why terminations occur, terminations for cause. In those instances, how it works is that the employer has a management personnel on the job with a field checkbook. They know what that person should be paid to the hour with the necessary deductions, because the payroll department initially has given that foreman a sheet of paper saying, if you terminate somebody for cause, whatever the cause, and they've worked 32 hours, 17 hours, however many hours they've worked, this is how much you write the field check out for, because the rest of it we'll have to pay in as taxes and workers' comp and all the other things. So they have the ability, by figuring it out one time and distributing it to whatever job sites they have, of knowing exactly what to pay depending on the hours worked at any given moment. And then I can assume that they're going to trust their management personnel with this field checkbook. Again, that could take place in a restaurant. I know that I'm speaking for someone who's organized, who has a contract that addresses this problem. We address it in terms of the law. Most all of us do in the trades. If I was to pull all of our different trades, probably 85% of them would duplicate the law in this process. And you're including any changes in this bill to them, because you can bet at the next negotiations they'll be talking about it, and it'll be a subject of negotiations. So if we're only addressing fares, and we're only addressing a problem of I don't have enough time to make this payroll out, and we're really not addressing termination, which I think management has an ability to handle without changing the law, then I think Representative Mannix was getting real close to the solution in leaving the law as it exists and changing the 48-hour requirement to 72 hours. That's not my testimony in favor of that change, but I think as I sit here and listen to everyone, that may be a solution that fits everyone's needs, or at least close to.
Greg, you wouldn't have a problem either way if we did or did not pass the bill, because you have a contract, is that correct? Am I reading that correctly? If it's in your
yes,
contract,
I do. But my contract is based on what law has already told us. Sure, so we write that into our contract. Okay. You change this, we're going to be back to the table negotiating another contract issue concerning this. We are not exempted from this because of contract, so I'm concerned to that extent. And I also, you know, it's your job, as we all know, to represent all the people out there and create the public policy. And although the construction workers can afford to hire a lobbyist to come here and tell you about them, I am concerned about those people that can't afford that process and that are out there that would be affected, that maybe only Boley hears about, if they have the nerve to actually call and make a complaint, which probably there are 10 for every one that don't call in. They just eat it, and we have to think about them, too. Okay.
Yes. Representative Repine?
Comment, just I want to thank Mr. People for painting the analogy of how this indirectly affects organized labor, because I had not really clearly drawn those two parallel courses, that this in effect has a direct effect on negotiations that you encounter as an organizer.
Thank you.
Mr. Teeple, I appreciate your concern for all the workers, as I share that. And it occurs to me that union workers have contracts, and union employers must have reasons to discharge union employees. I mean, that's pretty sort of the essence of most agreements, is that there be no that it's not at will employment. What about my suggestion or sort of musing that perhaps if employers were to adopt or agree to a good cause standard, at least in a very limited sense, that if an employer who could demonstrate a good reason for discharge would not be required to pay immediately, but one who could not or would not offer a reason would still be required to pay immediately. I'm very open about this. I'm seeking a trend here that I think is important. Obviously not going to apply to union workers, and may actually have the effect of weakening the immediate pay provisions of her union contract negotiations, rather. What would be your reaction to that?
Representative Edmondson, I think that lends itself to the employer having the ability to apply some subjectivity to this termination rather than the clear-cut way that the law addresses it now. And sure. Then I can see a litigious area be created by that situation, where Boley will now get involved if they're called, first of all. And again, much later we may find that grieved person, that grieved worker, was right. But they didn't get their pay all that time. Mm-hmm. And that's fine for those of us that can afford to do that. Mm-hmm. But for those that can't, that are on the road, or those that just don't make very much money, live from day to day, I would be concerned about them in that arena of allowing the employer to have that kind of subjectivity.
Okay. Well, I just want to kind of follow up on that. Sure. I want you to think about when an employer states a reason, how subjective that is. It seems to me the height of subjectivity is you're fired just because. No reason, just I didn't like you anymore. That's very, very subjective. And that is that utterly without objective basis. To say, I'm firing you because you've shown up late for work all week long is objective, it seems to me, because it requires there to be stated reasons. Now, I see your point coming, that it opens the door as soon as you get, and this is an employer's point of view, as soon as I give a reason for firing an employee, they argue with it. They get a lawyer, they go into the unemployment hearing, they go into Boley, they go into court, and they say that was the wrong reason.
Or Representative that was false Edmondson,
reason. And that's the downside of it.
How we handle it under collective bargaining, at least in my particular union, is that's a separate issue. You've had to have paid the employee off. They've received their money. Now we'll talk about whether the termination was just or not. And that's a whole other arena where we seek to get them back under the employ of the employer or not, find that the employer is correct.
So you think under my proposal, employers would gain the benefit of the delay, whether they had valid reasons or not, simply by giving a reason, they could enjoy the delay in payment. So by 2 weeks go pass by, or a month, 3 weeks, and they pay the check, the employee cannot get in to challenge the reason soon enough to make any difference.
That's the way I feel about it, yes.
That's a good point. I'm glad you observed that, Mr.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Greg, for your testimony. I appreciate you coming in. We have one fellow from out of town that I'd like to hear from, and that would be Mark Vegg. And we're going to have to go to session here in about 4 minutes, so we're not going to give you a lot of time.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Mark Vey. I'm Governmental Action Coordinator for Timber Operators Council, or TOC. TOC is a Forest Products Employer Association representing about 175 employers in Oregon. My comments are very brief. I just have a few points, some of which we've already hashed over, it seems, maybe a couple of new points. But on behalf of our members, we would support House Bill 2775. Under current law, requiring employers to pay wages immediately or within 48 hours of termination can disrupt an employer's business. We've heard about some examples of that. Some companies, particularly in remote areas, have their payroll functions administered through a separate payroll company in a larger metro area. It is burdensome for these companies to prepare paychecks out of the normal course of business. And also, difficulties can arise in finding available personnel on short notice with authority to sign payroll checks. Because of the accounting and payroll problems associated with preparing checks outside of the normal payroll cycle, some companies do delay employment terminations to the detriment of the employer's business. Requiring earned wages to be paid by the regular payday should not disadvantage a terminated employee, since payment is consistent with his or her expectations of payday. And I just, by way of rebuttal, perhaps, would like to respond a little bit further on that point, responding to the point that was mentioned earlier, that failure to pay that day of termination could mean the difference between eating or not or having a roof over your head.